Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of the region this Thursday, December 21st, 2023. A huge influx of refugees into South Sudan is contributing to more and more malnutrition cases in Upper Nile State.
This Khartoum crisis, we started to have many cases of malnutrition. And as you all know, the distance from Khartoum until they reach here, some of our children, they develop malnutrition. And sadly enough, we lose some of them.
And there are reports that some Sudanese refugees who find poor conditions in camps and return home are being forced to fight.
We've seen those reports, and they are extremely, extremely concerning. And you know what these reports show is how complex the situation of Sudan is, and how also it's not only about Sudan, it's also about the region.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities and medical partners in Malakal have reported soaring cases of malnutrition in the Upper Nile state capital. The head of the state's Ministry of Health says the large number of refugees and returnees from Sudan, which continue to stream across the border, has compounded the problem. Mamar Abraham Kwat reports for VOA from Malakal.
The Director General of the Upper Nile State Ministry of Health, Isaac Kwongo Ogilo, calls the number of malnutrition cases alarming. He says the distance refugees travel from Sudan Tereng and at the reception site is long and without enough food to eat along the way. He says the distance refugees travel from Sudan Tereng and at the reception sites is long and without enough food to eat along the way, many children and mothers arrive malnourished.
We see the one of children faster because they are children and of course, you should expect this from somebody just emerging from war situation. So malnutrition is there. But again, with Khartoum crisis, we started to have many cases of malnutrition. And as you all know, the distance from Khartoum until they reach here and how many days they spend on the way. Some of our children, they develop malnutrition. And sadly enough, we lose some of them, especially in areas of Ranga and transit on reception site upon arrival.
Emet Hatcher is the Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, medical coordinator at the Blukat Transit Center in Malakal County in Upper Nile State. He says from August to November, 20% of 16,000 returnees that MSF screened at the transit center were children under five. He says 7% of the children had severe acute malnutrition and conditions could worsen for the rest of the children without hygiene intervention.
As I said, for the total of consultation, we have 20% of the children. 7% of this total is severe acute malnutrition. And 19% is like children can develop malnourished. It's malnourished, but can decrease of situation, it will be worse. This need more support, more program, help those people.
Acha says protection and distribution of food must be improved to help refugees and returnees from Sudan survive. James Nyok, nutrition nurse for International Medical Corps, or IMC, says if a mother follows instructions, the nutrition status of her child will improve. He says the major challenge they have is that mothers sometimes sell the nutritional supplements known as plumpinat given to them for their children.
If a child comes with some mom and give the plumsap or plumna to her or him, and the mother went home and follow instruction from the nutrition assistant or nurse or nutrition officer, very well, the child may cure as soon as possible. When we have seen some mothers selling away the plumna in the market, we create and other forces for the mothers to bring back the immunization to know is it this child hit phenomenon or not.
18-year-old Achan Nyok is the mother of a 2-month-old baby receiving help at the IMC nutrition site in Malakal town. She urges other mothers to enroll in the feeding program to improve the nutrition of their children.
The CSV we get here, if you take it in the morning, it can sustain you to the time that you'll get lunch. There is improvement. Before, I was not that well, but currently, I'm now fine.
23-year-old mother Nyangiet Adong appreciates the workers who enrolled them into the nutrition program.
Once they give the baby the supplies, the baby have changed actually. I'm happy our children are getting services, and that's what I can say.
According to data from IMC Nutrition Center at Malakal Teaching Hospital, 355 children between 6 to 59 months were admitted with severe acute malnutrition, or SAM, from January to November this year. That compares with 322 last year. So far, 312 children were cured this year, compared with 296 last year. The cases of children with moderate acute malnutrition, or MAM, decreased to 816 between January and November this year, down from 1,164 last year. The number of pregnant and lactating women with children under 6 months old facing malnutrition fell to 720 through November this year, from 897 last year. For VOA News, I am Amer Abramquart in Malakal.
In Sudan, where conflict between two competing military factions has gone on for more than 8 months now, aid groups say some 6 million people are on the brink of famine there. Over a 3-day period recently, more than 300,000 people fled an area in El Jazeera State that before had seemed relatively safe. Matilda Vu, advocacy director in Sudan for the Norwegian Refugee Council, tells me that she is also aware of reports about how when some refugees find conditions so bad in camps across the border, they return to Sudan only to be forcibly recruited to fight for either the Sudan Army or the paramilitary rapid support forces.
Sudan was already one of the largest displacement crises in the world. We had more than 6.2 million people displaced over this past 8 months. 1 million of them crossed the borders into the neighboring countries. But now, just in 3 days, 300,000 people are now forced to flee. And the tragedy of this is that most of them had to do this twice in the past 8 months. They had to do it twice because 8 months ago they were living in Khartoum, in the capital city, and they thought they were okay. And on the 15th of April, a sort of urban warfare completely destroyed the city, completely destroyed the capital, and you had basically more than 30% of the inhabitants of Khartoum, they've left. And they found refuge 160 kilometers away in Wad Madani. Many of them couldn't go further away because they just simply had no means to go further. They couldn't pay for transportation. They had nowhere to go. And so they were stuck in Wad Madani. And now over this past 3 days, fighting basically was at the door of the city and then entered it. And that's how we see now continuous flow of families, completely desperate, completely traumatized and tired to have gone through this again and again.
The NRC is there on the ground in a lot of these neighboring areas where the refugee camps are set up. Can you share some like personal stories of some of these families where you've seen these people come across the border?
Yes. So, I mean, the tragedy of Sudan, again, is that it's, first of all, Sudan was a country of asylum. You know, it was hosting one of the largest population of refugees of the continent. Eritrean, Ethiopian, South Sudanese refugees had found refuge in Sudan. Starts the war, this basically country of asylum becomes a war zone. And you have basically a mix of foreign nationals and Sudanese people running for their lives and basically trying to find a shelter and safety across the border. So they fled, 1.1 million people fled to Chad, South Sudan, Ethiopia, and Egypt. mostly. And all those neighboring countries, where most of them we work in those countries, and we know that those countries are extremely fragile. We know that those countries have also their own conflict to deal with. They are also struggling with economic downturn, with a lot of humanitarian crisis on their own, and have zero capacity to actually welcome and host properly people who are fleeing the war in Sudan. So, for example, in Chad, you have a caseload of refugees who've been here for 20 years because 20 years ago they fled the genocide in Darfur. And now they are seeing hundreds of thousands of people coming, crossing from the same border through the same roads that, you know, 20 years ago they fled because, again, Darfur is on fire and mass atrocities are being committed. It's the same for South Sudan, where South Sudan has seen a lot of conflict over these past years. A lot of refugees from South Sudan crossed into Sudan to find safety, some of them reaching Khartoum. And now those same people have to return back to South Sudan in places that, you know, they don't feel safe either. So I don't think there's many wars in the world where people are fleeing a war zone to end up in another very unstable and very fragile country.
And then we've heard reports on top of all that, with this kind of miserable conditions you're talking about, that the people find in these refugee camps, there's not enough food. There's people with weapons inside the refugee camps, and there's violence there. So some of them have actually turned back to Sudan, and then they get forcibly recruited by both sides, either be it the RSF or the Sudan Army. Have you heard anything about that?
We've seen those reports, and they are extremely, extremely concerning. And you know what these reports show is how complex the situation of Sudan is, and how also it's not only about Sudan, it's also about the region. And that if we continue to turn a blind eye on what's going on in Sudan, on the refugee crisis across the borders, then we're going to see this type of dynamics. And the people who are going to suffer the most are going to be the civilians, who basically will have nowhere to flee, nowhere safe to be, and will have to, perhaps to resort to very harmful coping mechanism because they have no other choices.
That is Matilda Vu, Advocacy Director of Sudan for the Norwegian Refugee Council. She was speaking with me from Nairobi, Kenya. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, has issued a grave warning regarding the intensifying conflict in Sudan's Al Jazeera state, compelling over 150,000 children to flee within a week, as the conflict between the Sudan Army and the RSF engulfs more than half of Sudan's states, including Al Jazeera. UNICEF representative in Sudan, Mandeep O'Brien, tells VOA's Nabil Biagio about the urgent risks confronting children and families.
Since the war broke out from 15th of April, as you mentioned, more than half of the states in Sudan, that is 9 out of 18 states, have been experiencing active war. And since last Friday, the escalation of violence has started in Al Jazeera state, which now makes it more than half of the states in Sudan experiencing active conflict. It's been more than 8 months of brutal war in Sudan, which has been having a devastating impact on children. Sudan is a very young country, 50% are children, and the future of 24 million children in this country is at stake. As we speak, Sudan also records the world's largest child displacement crisis, because more than 3 million children have been forced to flee their homes. It is within this wider context, secondly, we need to see what is happening in Al Jazeera state now. Jazeera state has a population of 6 million people, and half of them are children, that is 3 million children. And since the war broke out on 15th of April this year, Jazeera state, which is the breadbasket of Sudan, has been a safe haven for many displaced children and families. So it has been housing almost close to 500,000 displaced kids, women and families. And since this violence escalated last Friday, children and women are fleeing on their foot. Many of them have been spending nights on the road and streets as they strive to reach safer locations. And that's where 150,000 children are estimated to have fled their homes in less than a week.
Yes.
The third point I would make is that it's deeply concerning. Children and families, for most of them, this would be a second round of displacement, which comes with a lot of trauma and horror. And the life-saving needs have increased, and the risks have only aggravated.
And with the suspension of all humanitarian field missions within and from Al Jazeera state, how is UNICEF addressing the challenges in delivering life-saving assistance, especially to children and families who are now at risk due to the escalation in fighting?
Well, firstly, Wad Madani, which is the capital of the Jazeera state, has served as a major humanitarian hub for many humanitarian actors, including UNICEF. So it's been a very critical lifeline for us to meet the urgent life-saving needs of children and families in Jazeera state, but also around it. So we are deeply concerned with this escalation of the violence, ongoing violence. Secondly, we are extremely concerned to take a concrete example, as we receive disturbing reports that all health facilities inside the Madani city have closed down due to the insecurity and attacks on health facilities, as well as targeting of health workers. For example, 20 oral rehydration therapy corners and cholera treatment centers, which were providing much needed life-saving treatment, have stopped functioning. And we are very worried about the cholera outbreak, because before this escalation of violence, there were already close to 2,000 cases reported in Jazeera state. Now, with all the children and families being forced to flee, we are very concerned about the spread of the outbreak. Third and last point is UNICEF has operational presence in the neighboring states, which are receiving these new caseloads of displaced children and families. So what we are doing is stepping up and scaling up our response in these states where we have boots on the ground. We are reprioritizing and delivering life-saving water and sanitation support, as well as health and nutrition, which is desperately needed by these newly affected populations.
That's UNICEF representative in Sudan, Mandeep O'Brien, speaking with my colleague, Nabil Biasho. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, voting continues for a second day in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you reward yourself?
I'll go and buy myself maybe a pair of shoes I always desire to get. I'll go and have a meal I always desire to get, or anything. Depends on what I've achieved.
By spoiling myself, I'm a girl. I go buy myself clothes, shoes, do my hair, my nails, basic things that will make me look good and happy at the end of the day.
I cook a good meal. I sit down with the children.
My work involves very hard work, so I get very tired. So I reward myself once every month. I do that by swimming and relaxing at the beach with my family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The Democratic Republic of Congo entered a second day of voting today. The Election Commission extended voting after a chaotic rollout and lengthy delays yesterday meant many could not vote despite standing in line for hours. President Felix Tshisekedi is seeking a second and final five-year term. There are 18 other candidates, but his top challengers are his 2018 election rival, Martin Fayulu, businessman Mwezi Katumbi, and Nobel laureate Denis Mukwege. My Swahili service colleague, Abdu Shakur Abud, is in Kinshasa, and a short time ago, he updated editor Kate Pound Dawson on the election.
Everything looks like it's going on smoothly today, although in Kinshasa, you don't have a lot of stations which are doing the voting again. But mostly it's in the east where we are told a lot of people did not participate in the voting. So as far as we understand, it's all going on well, and it hopes to be finished today. While that is going on, counting has finished in some places. We visited some places here in Kinshasa. Some vote polling stations have finished counting, and they've even announced some of the winners. But that is really, really very less than a 1%, we can say.
I understand there is some controversy about extending the voting, that some opposition party members are unhappy about it. What's going on with that?
Yes, the opposition are totally angry, not only about the extension of the voting. The extension of the voting is illegal according to the Constitution. But five of the candidates, presidential candidate, together with Martin Fayulu, who was beaten by Tshisekedi in 2018, together with Mwezi Katumbi and Mukwege, Dr. Mukwege, and another popular person, Theodore, have issued a statement shortly saying that they want the whole process redone. They consider the elections illegal. They don't feel the elections were free and fair, and they feel there was a lot of irregularities. So they have issued a statement not recognizing the elections before even the results are out.
Is there any announcement as to when we might get results? Have those been postponed? Is there any definite indication as to when we'll get all the final numbers?
No, we don't know. We have no idea. CENI themselves, they don't know. We tried to tell them. About 2 hours ago, they issued a statement saying that they agreed, the president of CENI, Kadima, saying that they agree there has been a lot of problems, but they think everything is going well. But hoping that by tomorrow they will be having all results counted from all areas where people are participating today, and expect in the next 48 hours they might have partial results.
That is Abdu Shakur Abud with the VOA Swahili service. He was speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. The French news agency AFP says more than 110 elephants have died in the soaring heat in Zimbabwe's largest animal reserve, Wange National Park. With the black clouds in recent days promising life-saving rains, the rangers may not find all of the victims of the drought on their daily hunts. The 14,600 square kilometer park is home to more than 45,000 savannah elephants, so many that they are considered a threat to the environment. A spokesperson for the Zimbabwe National Parks Authority, Zimpark, said the old, the young, and the sick have been worst hit. Some have fallen in dried up water holes. Some spent their final hours in the shade of a tree. Many are infant elephants. Today marked a poignant moment for VOA as the remains of Charlton Doki, the late South Sudan in Focus Juba bureau chief, reached their final resting place in Kayunga, Uganda. Mourners are gathering at his local church to pay their respects, while burial arrangements are underway for tomorrow afternoon. Reporting from Washington, Nabil Biagio brings us more with audio from Uganda, courtesy of Classic FM journalist Dennis Langonyi.
In the early hours of Thursday, Condolences poured in at Doki's family home in Kayunga, Uganda, as friends and family paid their last respects following the arrival of his body from Juba yesterday. Sebi Evans Waja, a childhood friend, is coordinating the burial arrangements.
The program, now that the body of Charlton is now with us, we have received him here. We shall stay with the body here for 3 hours, right from the time that the body arrived here. At four, we shall be moving the body to the church where Doki prays, but not only praying, where he contributed a lot in its construction. He spent his personal money to construct this this church, but also he mobilized resources from friends, colleagues, to see that the church is completed.
While Doki's body has reached his family home, it is being moved to the local church for an overnight stay. Organizers want to accommodate the numerous mourners paying their respects, and the church serves as a gathering point for the community, given Doki's active and beloved role within it.
The compound is small, given the friends of Charlton that we know. We think that by tomorrow, as we lay his body to rest, there will be many, many people that will come to see Charlton. So this compound is not enough, and that's the second reason as to why we shall be moving the body to the church. And all programs will be done there, speeches, church service, and everything will be done in the church. We shall only return the body to be laid in his final resting place tomorrow at 4.
Waja reflects on Doki's profound influence on his life in the broader community.
Right from the time we were still children, in many ways, Charlton has made me what I am now, because of sharing words of encouragement, planning together. He has not only been helpful to me as an individual, but to the community as well. He has helped individuals in times of need. There are relatives who have been in need, especially in need of medical care. He has always supported many, many other people, including the people in this community, in many, many other ways.
Waja says Doki's absence will be deeply felt not only in his community, but throughout South Sudan, particularly due to his work with Voice of America.
We have to reflect, if we are really to keep Charlton in our mind, we have to reflect on his contribution to the government of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan, because he has informed the people of South Sudan about everything that happens. But I am a listener of VOA, and I think VOA has been airing the best, honest, and truthful news. So if the government of South Sudan and the people of South Sudan think that the information that Charlton has been airing is the right one, then we don't have to forget Charlton. We should always remember him for his contribution to the South Sudan, South Sudanese people, and the South Sudan government.
As we bid farewell to our colleague Charlton Doki, he will find his resting place in Kayunga alongside his parents. May his soul rest in peace. Reporting for VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington, with help from Classic FM journalist Denise Logonyi in Uganda.
And that wraps it up for us this Thursday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed the start of this broadcast, you can head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by South Sudanese superstar Emmanuel Jal.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. Peace!
We have been listening to We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal. I am your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Bill Andrade, and producer, Gwen Uten, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.